Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
It's proverbially Boxing Day in the Super Bowl world. We've made it. We smashed through Christmas Day. Super Bowl Sunday is over. And we've got one hell of a happy co-host, big man. Happy Super Bowl Boxing Day. How are you feeling today?
We're world champions. Who would have thought it? The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are world champions for the second time. Never in doubt, was it really, when Tom Brady signed? That was it. We were all just sort of just playing the waiting game. No, I'm kidding. Incredible to have watched. Not just to have just watched us win, but dominate. I mean, like, as Super Bowls go, that is in the top five most dominant Super Bowl performances. And then when you put into consideration, they're the reigning champions, they're the team that were the favorites, they're the team with the offense, and you restrict them to what you restrict them to, and you think, what I just watched was absolutely incredible. So, yeah, unbelievable feeling to watch, to experience it. It's just about sort of sunk in. It's taken all day, I think. And there's a lot of people who I was messaging last night who are feeling very similar. We have a little WhatsApp, UK Bucks community. Some of them came on the special. And I think some of them might be watching this now, or might go back and watch it or listen to it. And we were all messaging a lot, and we weren't willing to admit it until, I don't know when, probably about 5 minutes to go, 4 minutes to go, is I think when we sort of allowed ourselves to think that this was the result. So yeah, very, very, very happy. It's just amazing to see your team win a Super Bowl, and unless you're a Patriots fan or an Eagles fan or Seahawks fan, Denver fan, or Chiefs fan, this doesn't come along that often. And even for the franchise I've mentioned, it doesn't come along. It's just the Patriots, really, that seems to turn up. So yeah, it's just incredible to experience it. And who knows what happens next year, but I think we just take some time and enjoy the incredible ability to win a Super Bowl in the way that they won it.
Yeah, I think it was 3:40 to go when you text me saying book it, and I'll hold my hands up. I had work super early this morning, so that is when I turned over. I thought, I can catch the celebrations another day. This one's over. The Bucks have won it, so I turned off and went to bed at Arden.
Yeah, I think when it
three-ish, I don't know. It was early.
Yeah, it was really just I think when it got to the point where it was still three scores, it was 5 minutes left. You knew we were going to have the ball once or twice more to it in that period as well. You kind of just got the impression that this was it. If they were going to do something, it was going to be in the first 5 minutes, 10 minutes of the half, and I think when we got to that stage with 5 minutes to go and they hadn't put points on the board, I was like, if they haven't done it by now, they're not going to put enough on in that period of time.
Yeah.
And that was the sort of point. And people were messaging like, congratulations, it's over. And I'm like, no, it's not over. I mean, I think back to when it was 28-9 and then Jensen throws one over Brady's head and Brady has to land on the ball. And you're thinking like, right, well, we've just thrown away 3 points here because Suckup's got a score from 52. And he does. And we're getting to it. But that was the point I started to believe, I think. But yeah, you're just incredible to go through. And, you know, if your team wins just any championship, whether it's a Super Bowl, whether it's a Champions League, a Premier League title, anything like that, the experience of winning it is incredible, and it's very different this year with COVID. I couldn't celebrate that with anybody else in person, but it was quite an intimate way to do it. I was at home, you know, up on my own. My wife was in bed, my kid was in bed, but I was messaging you guys. I was messaging a couple of close friends and the Buccaneers fans who we've ridden every game for the last few seasons together. And it was actually quite a nice way to do that, as opposed to being in a bar and going absolutely nuts. So I didn't mind really that much.
Yeah, I think as well, it's obviously with you being a Buccaneers fan, you and I have a slightly different view on the whole Super Bowl thing itself last night from what it was as a game perspective. Because obviously, it's all regardless of what the score is, it's going to be better for you because you are world champions. Your team, as you say, that never really happens. So, but I think for me, the game was over a lot sooner because the more the Bucks strangled Kansas, the more they had to try, the more they stuttered. And I mean, I don't have the stat in front of me now, but I think Patrick Mahomes ran nearly for nearly 400 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
He scrambled for 464 yards or something like that,
which is just ridiculous. I mean, that stat alone is why they lost, because he had to be so mobile yesterday. And you're asking a guy who needs toe surgery after the season to run for his life on every single play. It got to the point where I'm thinking, nothing's going to change here. They can't change anything enough to stop the Bucks ruling what they were doing.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where I just thought, this one's over far before it was, because it was just so different on every phase of the game. The Chiefs on offense couldn't do anything because the Bucks D was so good. The Bucks offense is as good as it was. It wasn't lights out, but the Chiefs defense made it almost like putty in their hands with the penalties and stuff. And then when they needed to, they scored. So it was just everything went the Buccaneers' way, and it was superb. Like to see Brady win another Lombardi, you get a championship. I was going to say ring, then you don't quite get one, but as a fan, you do. And yeah. I was happy either way, but I did want the Bucks to win. But as a neutral, it was much easier to see a Buccaneers win earlier out than you perhaps were for wanting to say.
And I think that's going to always be the case when it's your team there. I don't think you ever feel confident until it gets to the point where you think this one's done.
Yeah.
I think that's true of any fan. You know, It's a weird thing. People are asking me all week about, you know, do I think we can do it? And, you know, I was quietly optimistic. I don't think I put any real major, I don't think I put any like major like feelers that I didn't put exude any extreme confidence, but I was quietly confident. And I think a lot of it comes down to, there was just so many similarities from when we did this in 2002, and I appreciate that's not a logical reason given the difference of personnel and coaches. Like, everyone's different. There's no one that's the same. Literally, no one that's the same. But the point of this is when you win a championship, you just kind of know when you're seeing something. You just kind of know when you're seeing something break down in front of you. And I just knew they were getting better every week. I know Brady had a bit of a mare in the championship game with the three turnovers, but every week the Buccaneers just got a little bit better and a little bit better and a little bit better and a little. And it just, like, I didn't feel that with the Chiefs. I didn't look at the Chiefs and think, this is a team I really fear, because they hadn't looked great all year. They weren't getting better. Yes, they had a great championship game, but they should have gone out when they played Cleveland. They won a lot of games by less than one score. I think it was eight in a row. They won eight in a row by one score, like 6 points or less. They weren't blowing teams out. You know, when people go back, and people, I think, put Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs on this pedestal, 14-2, absolutely deserved. But do I really think that they were as good as they were last year? I'm not so sure they were as good. And if you go back and you listen to people's commentary on the season and commentary on the Chiefs, the whole thing was, we're just waiting for the Chiefs to click. We're waiting for the Chiefs to click. If you go back and listen to all of this, they didn't really. They had a couple of games. That first quarter against Tampa, electric. Probably the best quarter any team has played all season. But there's one. One quarter, and that's why I felt a bit confident, is I didn't feel that the Chiefs were coming into this massively strong. They were obviously favorites and deserved to be, and I said that they were, on paper, you could argue, the better team. But I didn't walk into this feeling this was insurmountable. This was a David and Goliath. And I think the bookmakers pretty similar. There's some people really shocked the Buccaneers won this, and I'm sitting there thinking, like, you haven't really watched the last few months. You kind of looked at that Week 12 game, and you didn't really look at the rest of it and go, because this result was kind of coming. It was. I don't think this is a shock at all. I don't think anyone. Maybe the manner of the victory and the size of margin is a shock, but the fact that they won it, I don't think it's a big shock.
No, I mean we mentioned it in the preview show that it could go either way, and there was no clear favorite. And I think you're right. The manner in the victory sort of takes a shine off what perhaps the Chiefs should have brought to the table. I mean, there were some plays that should have been made by the Chiefs. There was, you know, you don't get hit three times in the face guard or the face cage, as Neil Reynolds called it. I mean, those things don't happen. If your receivers are on form that day, maybe you miss one of them, but you get two of the other catches, and those plays could lead to other stuff. But that is all if, buts, and maybes, isn't it? The Buccaneers are world champions, and the Chiefs have got and Andy Reid as well has got a. I thought he was the type of coach who could perhaps adjust slightly to the Todd Bowles defense, what he's seen in front of him. But it was the same thing all night. And I think the offensive line suffered massively, and that was a key battle that the Buccaneers absolutely dominated in 60 minutes of football.
Yeah, here's what I don't want to happen through this. Is I don't want people to make excuses for the Kansas City Chiefs, because I've seen it all day. Well, their offensive line was banged up. They were playing with four of their five offensive line backups. Yeah, okay, fine.
But these guys are all NFL rostered players. They're not average Joes.
And then you're looking at, well, Mahomes, he needed surgery on his toe. He clearly wasn't fit. Well, he looked all right. And he looked all right in the championship game when he completely decimated Buffalo. Yes, I get.
To be fair, he was good. There. He was good yesterday, Mahomes. There was a few short passes where he underthrew receivers and stuff. But on the whole, for somebody who was running for his life, he was actually pretty good.
Yeah, and then the Andy Reid and his son being in a car crash, and that was taking away focus. I think all of these things are excuses, and I think take away from what really happened, which was one team just dominated the other team. I think they're all marginal things that do have an impact on the result, and I think if the result is a 7-point victory, you could sit there and probably argue that was the difference. When you get beat by 22, and let's be honest, it was 22 points because the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense in the second half didn't need to do a lot. They just took time off the clock. So it's a different game. When you don't have to score, it's a different game. You're not trying to get the ball down. You know, the Buccaneers stopped throwing the deep ball. They just started chunking plays and taking yards off and taking time off. They're not trying to score at that stage. All they're trying to do is kill the clock. It's a very, very different game. If the Buccaneers needed to score, I really genuinely believe they left a touchdown or two out there. But yeah, we've got a whole offseason to enjoy now. And the Buccaneers will be picking 32 in the draft for the first time in their history. I think it puts everything on the table. I think it literally puts everything on the table. I think every position is on the table until after free agency. When you're picking a 32, I legitimately think anything other than kicker is probably on the table. Because, I mean, like, I wasn't one for thinking let's take a quarterback in round one, but then when you're looking at a 32, you're thinking like, well, a 5-year option. Yeah. Oh, we're back.
Am I now live in the webs?
Yeah. So let's get back into... We did have a bit of a show. We were going to do a bit of an intro, and was going to talk about the week in the build up to this, because it was a bit of a strange week in general. We did our previous show that went out. It was phenomenal. The responses for that were brilliant. But you know, I got to this point on Saturday, and I messaged you guys, and I messaged our staff that I wasn't sure I wanted to do a show this week, because social media has been really, really cruel to us as individuals, to me personally, over the last few weeks. It's been pretty horrible, and I kind of suffered a little bit in silence, which is not a good thing to do. I kind of let a lot of it ride off, and I kind of tried to not let any of it bother me oh too much, and I don't think a lot of it probably did at first. But basically over the last 3 weeks, myself personally, and then also this podcast has been tagged with some pretty horrible things being said, such as I've personally been called moron, a stupid, evil, a hate preacher, which really didn't understand what that was. a few four letter swear words, disgusting, vile. We were called snakeskin oil and salmon. Basically, like, we just sell, we don't care, we're just in it for money, which, you know, I'm quite happy to go very publicly here and say that I've never taken one penny out of nor have you, Stocks, nor have you, Lee, that all three of us have never taken a penny for financial gain out of this. That, yes, we had made money, yes, we've taken some expenses back from stuff that we've paid for, but we've never taken one p's profit. I think the thing that we've splurged ourselves on is we've allowed ourselves to buy ourselves some, like a Five of Us t-shirt or something out of the business account. We bought some for our staff, but who write for us for free. And we bought them things with that money, but we spend most of it on either the show or whatever. So the fact that, you know, people think that we're in this for financial gain, I tell you that for free, that's not true. People insinuated that we take charity money and put it out in our back pockets. And I think that was the one that really got me. And listen, we're in a time that, for me, Saturday was a very dark day. I've really struggled mentally with lockdown, with a lot of things, to be perfectly honest. And it's not something I'm comfortable talking about. I just think it's something that you keep private. You try and handle as best you can. And I felt quite ashamed at a lot of this. And there is still a bit of a stigma, and at least in my head, and I know that shouldn't be true. And there was just a lot of bullying. And I've been bullied a lot in my life for many different reasons. And it's not just us. You know, you look at what's going on with Manchester United minority players. You look at today, Mike Dean, the football referee. And listen, I don't like Mike Dean. I don't think he's a very good referee. I don't think he should do his job. But to deliver death threats to him and his family for some decisions that he's made in a football game is just a little bit too far. And there is something going on in our society with regards to social media that people can just be anonymous and write pretty disgusting and horrible things to people who are just trying to either do their jobs or try and do good. We're just here to try and entertain people and talk about the things that we love. And to have the messages that have been sent to us and cause doubt and concern and smirch the name. For me, what upset me was the fact it came back on everyone else. What did we do to deserve such messages? We asked not to be tagged in a post that was promoting merchandise. It had the word please in it, and people can argue whether or not that was the right strategy or whatnot. Hindsight probably should have sent a DM, but we didn't. At the end of the day, we just asked not to be tagged in merchandise posts, which I think is perfectly fair. If we've said that we don't want to, you know, that's what caused a lot of this. So, and we've seen what's happened. There's been other examples. I'm not going to name other podcasts and things that people have done recently, but I really got to the point on Saturday where I messaged you both. I said, I just don't know if I want to do this week or for a few weeks. And I said, I just need some time away. I wrote in some groups. I mean, I got out of a lot of Facebook groups. I changed all my settings on Twitter so that people who don't follow me can't message or whatever. I changed a lot of things. And then some things happened over the last 48 hours that changed my mind. And a lot of people say, well, you won the Super Bowl and that's made you a lot happier. I'm not going to lie. A little bit of it is that. But actually, there were two really big things. And the first one was the death of Chris Wessling was the one that really was the first thing that kind of changed my mind. Now, I've met Chris. I met him very briefly at the Buccaneers Carolina game in 2019. For those of you who don't know, he hosted the Around the NFL podcast. If you haven't heard of that podcast and you're listening to this one, I mean, I guess kudos. but really, you should go and listen. In fact, I'm going to be really blunt and honest now and say they put an episode out today in memory and dedication of Wes. If you're listening to this on podcast, you haven't listened to the one on Wes, then just hit the pause button now on this podcast and go and listen to that one first. Because it's an hour and 7 minutes long of just one of the most wonderful tributes to one of the most, what seemed to be really lovely blokes in this world. And, you know, I met him. He gave me some great advice about how to watch football and what to look for in certain things and some books to read and things like that. And he was really gracious with his time. But I've listened to him for a number of years. I know you have, Stocks. I know you do, Lee. I know a lot of our writers know a lot of people listen to that podcast. It's the best podcast out there. It's what we all aspire to be. It's the Blue Ribbon podcast, really, a football podcast. It's the Blue Ribbon podcast. And, you know, that really hurt to see that. And it makes you think that, you know, life is short, that we are all so vulnerable that we could all not be here next week. And this is a dark thing, and I'm not going to go into a big thing, but that was the first thing I was like, why would I not want to do the thing I love, which is talking here with you guys, especially you, Stocks. You know, you're like my brother, who I love very much. And I was thinking, why don't I, you know, why am I denying myself something I absolutely love and want to do? Because some people who don't have the courage to either create themselves or try and pull down those that do, I just kind of, that kind of gave me a wake up call. And then the other was some great messages from people. I didn't tell many people about this. I told a couple, but not many. But we had some wonderful messages of support from people who had seen these posts and retaliated with their own positive posts of their own and defending the positions. And again, I kind of think, well, why would I stop myself from doing the thing I enjoy and let somebody who is anonymous behind a crappy handle win? Like, it gave me the wake up call I needed. And then obviously you win the Super Bowl, and that kind of also perks your mood up a little bit because it takes you away. You know, we're in a difficult time with lockdown. We've been locked down for the best part of a year. I know some people that weren't locked down for periods, whatever. I basically see it as if this is an 11-month lockdown that I've not seen family or close friends. I've seen you a couple of times, Stocks. I've not really seen anyone else, a couple of people, but I mean, I've not seen my mum. I've seen my mum once in 12 months, and not inside in a public setting. Not seen my sister in that time. I've not seen other loved ones, close friends. So I think a lot of it gets to it. And you know, I think if you are feeling like that, whether it's trolls, whether it's people just criticizing, whether it's you feel trapped in your own home or you're trapped with lockdown, my DMs are open. Drop me a message. I just think talk at Murph_NFL. You know, maybe we do Zoom chats over lunchtime. Maybe we do whatever we can do to talk. I need to do it more. I'm not trying to go from like this higher power, far from it. I struggle as best or more than most. But we got to do more. We got to do more as people to not just talk about these issues, but actually on top of that, we have to make sure that we're all held accountable to what we say and do. And inversely, social media companies need to be held accountable. If you're the type of person that's going on and trolling people for good, people who do good, or people who just do something, and you're trolling those people and you're sending death threats or you're writing pretty horrible things and accusing people of pretty horrible things, you need to take a look in the mirror. You really need to take a look in the mirror, and you need to ask yourself who you are as a person and why do you feel like that? Because why would you do that? Why would you message? Why would you put in a public forum that three people are stealing money from charities and people? Like, I mean, our charity competition last year, we didn't take a penny because we asked people to donate. We asked people to donate. We said to people, donate to whatever cause you want. This is an extraordinary year where a lot of charities are in effect. And we didn't even make it mandatory. We said, if you've got the money, donate, suggested amount, £10, $10. Send a screenshot. That'd be great. Let us know how much we kind of raised. But we didn't handle any of that money. We didn't put it in a bank account. We didn't take any money. We asked people to donate to a cause that they believed in because charities suffered massively in 2020. This year, we've got a GoFundMe page that's on our pinned tweet. When, no, I just, you know, I'm not going to give the crap any more public airing than I have. This is more a message of, if you are being victimized on Twitter or any other social media platform, or you're just mentally struggling and you just need to talk, my DMs are open. You can drop me a DM. We can schedule a call. We can do a Zoom call. We all need to talk. And if you're struggling, it's okay to struggle.
It's okay to not be okay, I think is the big mantra here. And I think it is down to that mental health thing. We need to, it doesn't matter who you are. If you want to talk, then we're available to talk. Even if you want to talk about something, like I'm quite good at listening. So if you want to come and talk to me about crocheting, or if you can teach me one thing in our conversation, or I can make you feel slightly better by being a bit of a goon, then hit me up, because I'm available for chat just as well as Murph is. I'm not on Twitter, but if you really want to talk to me, you can find me. I am out there. That's not a challenge, but it's just harder to find me than it is everybody else. But I think, I mean, the thing with the Wes's passing that really got me was it being a father of a young boy, especially. Mm. And I obviously Link's, and there'll be people around Link for the rest of his life who will tell him just how wonderful Chris really was. And Lakeisha would do the same. But I think as far as Chris was going, you know, when he, I don't know how much he knew when he was passing or anything like that, but he's just going through his brain would have been the fact that he's leaving Link behind at such a young age, regardless of how he's, what he's dealing with. And I think that that would be destroying in itself. And you can't imagine what that would be like in his situation. I know it would be crushing for me. It would be crushing for anybody who was leaving a young child behind. So I found that bit difficult in respects to young child being involved.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And again, we're all three of us, Lee here, you know, all three of us have children aged 2 or less. And I put myself in that position and thought, wow, I'm such a good bloke. Like, you know, you hear tributes of people, like you just know he's a good bloke. And
yep.
Yeah, it's someone I've met once, very briefly, in a very short interaction, but I've exchanged tweets, and I just really, yeah, it hurt like that. I mean, like,
I think it touched many more people than perhaps
100%
people thought it. Not people thought it would. That's a terrible way of putting it, but his outreach was far greater than perhaps he knew. Or they knew as a podcast and everybody involved with that podcast. I think when you have 4 people of not that stature, but who individually bring so much to us, to an event such as the Around the League podcast, that it magnifies itself when something like this happens. And, you know, the fact that those 3 guys were able to get on with their telecast during Sky Sports, during the Super Bowl for Sky Sports with such professionalism is a statement for them as well, as much as missing their comrade, because I'm not sure I could do it if somebody that close to me passed that close to the Super Bowl. And then it's such a shame, and he will be sadly missed.
He really will. And I think there's a GoFundMe link going around. We'll put it in the podcast notes as well. Last time I checked, they'd raised $125,000 for Lakeisha and the family. If you can donate, even if it's $1, £1, whatever it is, please do. I just think it's a horrible, cancer's a horrible thing. Mm-hmm. It's a horrible thing. I hope, in our lifetime. You know, and I think back to others who have you know, died of cancer in this community. Steve Raines is one that pops back to me, that, you know, we're having a conversation about Steve Raines, and I'm talking to him about who, you know, taking Nikhil Harry in the draft, and we're playing in a fantasy league with him, and then, you know, 2-3 months later he's passed away, and you're just like, what? And he didn't know. It's not like he had cancer for years. It was just something that was found, diagnosed, and yeah, I just, cancer's a horrible thing. I know Jack Humphrey, I think of everyone I know, probably had, of the Kickers Matters podcast, probably had the worst 2020 of anyone I know, in terms of who he lost. There's people out there that have suffered a massive amount of losses, not just to cancer, but just losses in general. And if that's not a wake-up call for people just to do better, just do better, just be better people. Just when you write a tweet, just think before you send it, do I really want to send this? What's the repercussions of me sending this? What's that going to do? And do you know what? Even if you send it, and even if it's wrong, just send an apology. Just apologize. I apologize to someone who I didn't think my tweet was massively offensive. They took offense to it. I apologized. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes things get taken the wrong way. It's binary text. The meaning and the spirit behind things can be taken all sorts of different ways. That's okay. But if someone feels bad because of what you wrote, apologize. Just say, I didn't mean it like that. I'm really, truly sorry you feel like that. But not in that sarcastic, I'm sorry you felt like that. But in that, I meant no offense. Did not mean it to be like that. I am sorry. I'll think better before, or I'll think more clearly before I send something, and think about all the repercussions of how that sends. People are going to make mistakes with tweets. People are going to send mistakes with messages. That's okay. Nobody's perfect. But when you hurt somebody, own up to it, apologize, move on. If you're one of those people who just do this for kicks or fun, or I don't know what fun there is in it, then I really hope that you can find yourself again. I hope you can find yourself as a person, and I hope that you can talk to somebody about why you feel the need to do that. And I hope that you can, I don't know why people would do it. So I'm not going to sit and say you need to reach a certain outcome. But anyway, enough about that. I wanted to say that because, you know, I very nearly didn't want to, well, I didn't on Saturday. I didn't want to do this show, regardless of the outcome. I didn't want to do it because I just thought, I don't know if this is worth it. And that's not the right attitude to have. And that's something I need to be better at. But anyway, we had a great game yesterday. Not for everybody. I know some people didn't. Let's break it down really, really quickly and talk about the game itself. And I think the fitting thing for me is to talk about the you know, we did the build up to death. But I don't know. Did any of you watch any of the pregame?
So I only watched from 11. So no, 11 was yeah. It 11? Yeah, so obviously I slept before because I had work. So I slept before, watched it, and then went back to bed. So I only watched probably 35, 40 minutes of pregame. So I didn't see much.
So I watched the NFL Network coverage of it, and I had to turn it off. Now, I get the fact that it's the Super Bowl. It's the biggest event of the year, especially for NFL Network. And I get the fact that they're trying to make it as normal as possible. Where I got really awkward with it was there was a few things. First of all, they did an interview with Rich Eisen and Cynthia Freeland, and she was going through some game picks of like expected outcomes of the game, right? On will Travis Kelce get over 100 yards, or will Rob Gronkowski be a factor in this game, right? All these sorts of things. But she was a hologram. So Rich Eisen interviewing a hologram, and it was like timed kind of, it was either timed scripts between the two, or it was a live interview in which they just superimposed her in the stadium. Wow. It was very weird. Like we've been on Zoom for a year almost. You can do a Zoom call. I'm not going to think any less of NFL Network
yeah.
for doing a Zoom call in that scenario. Quite, I don't know. Maybe I'm not the target audience, but I just thought that was weird. And then the really weird one is they got an interviewer to interview Tom Brady's parents. And again, this interview is clearly conducted over Zoom, but what they've done is they've made it look like the reporter is in this is in Tom Brady's parents' house. So they've got her sat in a room facing the camera with like all the decoration behind, and you've got the parents sitting at the table. And very weird. And I was just like, there's just no need to make it look like she's in the room. Just like, again, make it a Zoom call. I don't care. Whatever. It just was weird. And they made it like she's talking to the camera as if she's talking to Tom Brady's parents. And you're like, Tom Brady's parents' house is not decorated like that. It's very clear that they're very different locations because one is very minimalist and there's not a lot. And the other one's got loads of pictures in the background, all these other things. Like, it's clearly not the same place. I don't know. I just thought it was weird. I'd turn it off. I'd have to turn it off. And I end up watching the America's Game of the 2002 Buccaneers.
Very apt.
Because it was weird. I just thought it was weird. I was like, please, next year, can we not do weird hologram and weird stuff like that? It's just, no. Unless, if you can't get people in the room, do it on Zoom. It's fine. It doesn't make the viewing spectacle any less.
Unless we are just getting older and technology is slowly passing us by and the halftime shows are getting less and less attractive. Not attractive, that's the wrong word, but a less and less appealing to watch rather than going to sort yourself out with another beer and some wings or whatever and a coffee and coming back to get the second half. I don't know, but we'll get to the halftime show. But let's quickly run through the first and second quarters. The first obviously started, it was a cagey start for both teams, 3 and 4 outs. The Chiefs actually scored first. Brady had the moniker of never scoring a touchdown in the first quarter, didn't have long on the clock, but managed to race up and score, and then Gronk scored a touchdown. Mahomes was limited to just 9 passing yards in the first quarter. It was dink and dunk the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting first quarter. You know, I thought they'd come out firing. Brady's been in Super Bowls before. Mahomes had been there last year. I kind of thought that, you know, 3 and outs, 4 and outs, neither team really looked like they were settled. And then the Buccaneers went on that scoring drive at the end of the first to take the lead. And it was the first drive of the game really that looked strongly coherent, and they put a really, really good drive together. But it was very, very cagey. And I think at the end of the first quarter, nobody looked at the game and thought, what's going to transpire over the next 3 quarters is what's going to transpire. Like, I think people were quite happy with the start. It was a bit cagey, didn't really have the free flowing, but there wasn't any real conclusions to be drawn other than both defenses looked like they were really up for it and were containing. And it was the first part of a chess match. And we thought, okay, it's still close. It's still going to be a good game. A shout out to Gronk. I mean, he was phenomenal again to get the touchdown. Brady knowing where to find his men for the drive. I thought it was a very interesting first quarter. Like, it went by really quickly, despite all the caginess. Like, I watched the game. I didn't really know kind of what to take out of it other than this should be a good game.
Yeah,
there's not much really to say. I thought that the Buccaneers got to Mahomes. They put pressure on. They forced him to escape. He was escaping very well in the beginning. I thought that the way that they took Tyreek Hill out of the game in the first quarter was massive. Overall, it was again kind of. But then they got to Brady. They caused pressure. Kansas City Chiefs. It wasn't really a big play in that until sort of that last drive of the quarter. But yeah, it was a cagey first quarter, but the Buccaneers got their act together first and got the first meaningful points of the game.
Yeah. And then we thought, well, I thought Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs would come right back at the Buccaneers and level things up and make it close again. And it was going to be the dogfight that we all hoped, but the Buccaneers, they forced great field position twice. They then got stood up on the 1 yard line. I mean, they couldn't get into the end zone. The Chiefs did really well there, stopping the touchdown run. Then the Chiefs had to settle for field goal. And then the Buccaneers did it again towards the end of the first half. The Chiefs turned it over, and there was just 2 penalties that meant the Buccaneers were on their way.
The Chiefs got a turnover, but it was taken back because of the penalties.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The holding that was... I can't remember who it was now.
It was the holding by Tyrann Mathieu.
Yeah, I was confusing it with one.
For, oh, no, he caught the ball, so it was...
Yeah, it was a Tre'Davious Ward. Tre'Davious
Ward on Mike Evans.
Yeah, and then, obviously...
They stopped the Buccaneers twice on that drive. So the first one was... the first was obviously the interception, which then got taken straight off because of the hold. And the second was they jumped offside on the field goal. You know, the Bucs scored a field goal on that drive. It was 4th and 5. Bucs, you know, sucker puts it straight through the upright. It's, 17 points to 6.
Hmm.
And then they jump offside. It's exactly 5 yards. Buccaneers get the first down and continue the drive. I just, you can't make silly. And then you've got the PI in there. The Chiefs calling timeout on 3rd and 2. I mean, there's just so many different errors. They just, the Chiefs defense in that, there was about a 5-6 minute spell where they just made a lot of errors, enough errors to lose a game. I mean, at halftime, they were the most penalized team in the history of the Super Bowl at halftime.
Oh, that's going to take some beating going forward, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't give away too many in the second half, but wow, I mean, they really, really, and you know, this is the point where people will talk about some of the calls. I thought the only one was the PI in the end zone was 50-50. I thought the rest were, you couldn't really argue them. And again, it looked like Arians and Bowles and everyone had talked to the officials in their meetings and said, they're bitey. They're going to grab on runs. They're going to grab our receivers. Just keep an eye on that. They're going to grab the receivers. And it was very clear that the officials knew what to look for. And then what was silly was they kept doing it. You know, you get penalized once or twice and you think, well, okay, fine. We've got to adjust our game plan. You cannot keep getting penalized for the same errors, because that's how you lose football games. And that period there where they allowed the Buccaneers to score a touchdown when really they should have got off the field. And then the timeout, people will talk about that timeout and say, well, what were the Chiefs doing calling a timeout on, you know, a Buccaneers 3rd and 2 on a 1 minute drive? At the end of the day, they're trying to get the ball back. They're clearly not performing and they're trying to get an extra possession. I 100% get the logic on it. And I think it's the right call, because when you haven't got anything going for you, you need to try and do something different. Doing the same thing isn't working. You're trying to be aggressive. You're backing your defense to get a stop on 3rd and 2. It doesn't work. It costs you a touchdown. It's a fine margin. That's a Super Bowl. It's the same reason that the Buccaneers went for it on 4th and 1 instead of kicking a field goal. Kicking the field goal is the easy decision, right? It's the easy line when you take the 3 points. Buccaneers went for it. If they'd lost the game by 3 points, I guarantee you everyone would have looked at that call in the second quarter and gone, well, that was too aggressive.
Yeah.
But that's the game. You've got to play the win. The Chiefs played the win. That decision was not a bad decision. It didn't work out, but it wasn't a bad decision.
Hmm. Well, as we're talking ball so fluently, Murph, we'll skirt over the halftime show and we'll come back. Moving into the third quarter, the Chiefs scored first, but it was another field goal, which would end up being final score of the game. It was at that point I messaged you saying this, something along the lines of, this is, you know, this one's looking pretty good. And then obviously podcast favourite, Noodle Legs himself, Playoff Lenny. He's definitely resurrected himself in the eyes of Murph right now. I don't know how that will come next year, but I mean, the Chiefs continue to let Patrick Mahomes be chased all over the field. The Bucks were just an absolute pressure cooker. It was unbelievable. You see some of their plays and their formations and stuff along the line, you think, no wonder they get to people. You can't cover that when they know almost know what teams are running, and you've just stunts and blocks, and it was superb to watch, really. And then obviously Ryan Suckup does what he's been doing all season, straight through the middle, like plump.
Yeah, but not from 52, he hasn't. No, I mean, true. My word. When he kicked it from 52, I was like, I think we're going to win this game. I was like, 52. I was like, this is Ryan Suckup. I mean, listen, he's automatic from 40 and under all day long. Got no problem. Like, Keys is making it all day long from 40 and under. And there's a great value in that. But from 52, when, and it came from Jensen. He throws the ball over Brady's head. It's similar to the Ben Roethlisberger nightmare against the Browns in the first round of the playoffs. He said everything. Oh, my God, no. We've just thrown 3 points away. It's only then 28 points to 9. It's still close. And I sat there and thought, oh, what's going to happen? And then Suckup drills it from 52. And I thought, wow, if he's drilling 52. I mean, his career long's 54. It's not exactly. It's not, yeah, and long 60s.
We talked about Tampa as well being a difficult place to kick.
Well, everyone made their kicks. There was no missed kicks in that game. Other than the punter had an absolute nightmare. Tommy Townsend. I mean, he's a rookie, bless him.
His first punt that got called back was really good. And then it was holding on that punt and they moved it back and then he duffed it. So I guess that was a pressure situation that got to him there. But
yeah, I mean, that's what it was. And then the turnover, I mean, it's unlucky from Holmes. It gets called the interception. It's tipped. And
that's
then,
part and parcel of playing quarterback. If you throw the ball and it's tipped, it's an INT. But yeah, it wasn't on him.
It's tipped by the Buccaneers defense and Anton Winfield Jr. comes back with the ball. And I mean, listen, it's an incredible reaction play, and that started to, I think at that point people were starting to think, okay, this game's done. When you start getting the turnovers, I mean, yeah. But I thought what was interesting in that third quarter was you thought the Chiefs were going to have to come out at halftime. They were getting the ball. They're going to make a statement drive. Okay, they get points. Fair enough, they get points. You think, fine. But you thought they're going to make a statement drive, and they don't. He's sitting there thinking, like, you're waiting. And this is where Shaq Barrett was incredible in that second half. JPP, Lavonte David, Devin White, Sean Murphy Bunting, all those guys were just incredible in that third quarter. Because it would have been so easy to let the Chiefs score. Would have been so easy. I mean, they took Tyreek Hill out of the game. And they said to Kelce, well, you could have your catches down the middle. Fine.
He didn't even really have enough of those to be impactful, did he?
No, I mean, you look at his stat line at the end of the game and you sit there and think, oh, he had 10 catches for 130-odd yards. I mean, that's cool. He had a game. And you realise that actually all of them kind of came when the game was over. Mm. And the Buccaneers were just stopping the big play. Oh, you know what? If you want to have 28 yards over the middle, that's fine.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter to us. You can have 28 yards in your own half. Like, that's all right, because you're not going to get 50, 60. You know, the Buccaneers didn't give up a really big play. They gave up a 30-yard play to Kelce when the game was pretty much dead, and they gave up a 20-odd-yard run to Clyde with Hilaire. And that was it.
Mm.
Tyreek Hill didn't. I think Tyreek Hill had a 21-yard play again when the game was pretty much dead. There was a lot of garbage time yards that kind of got tacked on there. But when the game was in balance, There weren't big plays.
No.
Where the big plays were being made by the Buccaneers. Receivers Mike Evans made a big play. Antonio Brown made a big play. Gronk made a big play. Playoff Lenny made a big play. They were playoff the ones Lenny. Making the play.
There's no way Lenny. His moniker is not changing from Noodle Legs to Playoff Lenny. I just will
he's
not
Playoff Lenny now. He's got a ring. And then we'll talk about the fourth quarter because, okay, there are no points in the fourth quarter. And this is my point where I said about this could have been 45-9. The Buccaneers decided that they weren't in need of scoring any more points. They got 31. And they just took the game away from the Chiefs. They just ran the ball. They ran it hard. They tired that team out. And then what they were doing is they were punting them back inside their own 8, their own 7. You know, they just made them work the whole field. It was like, you can have a first down. You can have another first down. Don't worry about it. What's anyone first down? You can have a first down. That's fine. You get a first down. But then when it got to the 40-yard line, 30-yard line, they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, how many Chiefs drives ended up in the red zone? Two? I think it was two, maybe three if one of the field goals was. But, I mean, they didn't make many trips down the red zone. They were really good in their own half. When they got backed up, they did really well to move the football. And then kind of when they got to halfway, they just couldn't move the football that well.
Yeah.
It was very, very bizarre. And smarter people than us will do a dissection of this game and a dissection of the top ball defense and rushing four and everything here. But, you know, at the end of the day, this was just a good old-fashioned beatdown. and one team completely whooped the other team. And that is, I mean, no one expected that in the Super Bowl.
No.
And if they did, they wouldn't have expected the Buccaneers to be the ones to do the whooping. They would have thought the Chiefs would have run up 50 points. So, yeah, I mean, I thought Shaq Barrett in that second half was nothing short of remarkable. The amount of times he turned into a Benny Hill sketch when he was chasing Mahomes around the field. I mean, even Will Golston had a go trying to get Mahomes down. And Will Golston's been playing in the NFL longer than I've been alive, it feels like. I mean, like, he remembers the days when Emmerdale was Emmerdale Farm. Like, that's how far back Will Golston's been playing in the NFL. I feel like he's like 108. I don't remember the NFL without Will Golston. Like, he's been playing for years. I don't actually know how old Will Golston is. I just know that he's been a staple of the NFL since 1947.
He's secretly probably got more rings than Tom Brady.
He's got one, but yeah.
At that age, he should be everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, he was there. He was there when the Yucks got founded. I mean, 1976, he was there. No, I'm joking. I love Will Golston, good lad. But yeah, I mean, unbelievable to just see Mahomes running like 30 yards behind the
other. It was pure Madden. It was like, I'm going to get the football. I'm going to run backwards until my receiver's open. But then he had just, the pressure was phenomenal. It was phenomenal.
So let me ask you this question. Right? So we've watched this game. Right? We know how this game was won. It was won with efficient offense, fantastic defense. Do the other 30 teams in the league look at that game, study it hard, and think that's how we stop the Kansas City Chiefs? And then, on top of that, do we think that there are enough teams that are able to execute that kind of plan with the talent they have, and be good enough to stop the Chiefs next season to maybe not make the Super Bowl? I'm throwing it out there. Because I don't know the answer. And I want Lee on this as well, because I know he'll have some skin in the game being a Dolphins fan.
Well, there's a beautiful edit for me later on this evening. I think Andy Reid is too good of a coach to let the entire offseason go for this to happen exactly the same. I think there's very few defenses in the league who are capable of A, having the defensive personnel, but B, having the defensive coach like Todd Bowles to put A and B together to get a result as similar to the Super Bowl as we just seen. I think the Chiefs have too many weapons for that to... And listen, if the Chiefs and Buccaneers play again next year and the result in the Super Bowl, the fixture in the Super Bowl is the same, can I see the Buccaneers, if they keep hold of Todd Bowles and their defense, doing exactly the same thing? Yes, because what we saw yesterday was nothing short of remarkable. But I think throughout the league, I don't know if there is enough talent elsewhere, perhaps maybe Pittsburgh, or I don't know. I just think what they offer weapon-wise when they're firing, and I know you said at the start of the podcast, we didn't really see it since the first quarter against the Buccaneers, a Chiefs offense go, but we have seen that team do that, and I think they've got the capabilities to do so. So no, I don't think that this is now a blueprint to beat the Chiefs every week.
Okay.
Lee, you may speak.
I actually think the opposite. Because, and I've got reason for this. We saw the Dolphins do this to the Chiefs earlier in the season, where Jerome Baker chased Patrick Mahomes 30 yards down the field and made a tackle. I think the trick to it is, you don't want Vita Vea breaking through and chasing him, because he's going to make Vita Vea look silly. Vita Vea is a great player. It's a wrong matchup. You want speed guys, because Patrick Mahomes loves to just, if it's not there, just fall deeper and deeper and deeper. If you've got speed guys who can at least stop him setting his feet, there is a blueprint there to actually make this a workable system where you can cause him some real problems, because all of a sudden he's got to move away from speed, which, yes, he's usually able to do. But we found now that you get some of the really fast edge rushers, even some corners and safeties are able to, say, just stop him from setting his feet and actually looking down the field.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe safeties and corner blitzes are the way to get to Mahomes with the speed. But Yeah, all right. I like it. I like the fact that we're split down the middle so far, and one of us will be either right or wrong.
I think it's definitely interesting to see, if nothing else. It's that there is a there's something for teams to try. If they figure it out, great, fine. But
it was great to see a corner blitz yesterday. I tell you that. I mean, it was great to watch Sean Murphy Bunting come off that corner and have a go. I thought, you know, I said this in the preview show. I can't remember who I said it to, and I think I said this on TalkSport. The Todd Bowles is going to have to do things that he has not done all season. And he did that. I looked at the game plans and I thought the Chiefs tried to do what they do best. The Buccaneers tried to do something different. And if I had to explain this game to anybody, that is how I would explain it. We saw things from the Buccaneers that we just haven't seen, especially from the defense. The offense was pretty efficient. And I mean, I still can't believe that playoff Lenny has wheels. We've waited 5 years. We've waited 5 years to see him have wheels. I mean, like, quick. He went in untouched into the end zone. I mean, like in the NFL, in the Super Bowl, he's gone in untouched. That kid has wheels.
Yeah, but that is purely because he has been in the air dryer for a week and those noodles stiffened up a little. But trust me, noodle legs will be back.
Yeah, he will be back. He looks like he's going to be a Buccaneer.
Until Najee Harris proves otherwise when you pick him at 32.
So here's a question, right? So we're 24 hours from the game, not even that. What does this mean for both teams for next year? And what do both teams need to do to either get back here or change the outcome or win or repeat?
What a question. It's also 24 hours since I had very little sleep, and try and work that one out is difficult.
I mean, I've had 2 hours sleep, I'm with you.
I mean, for the Buccaneers, Tom Brady himself has said he thinks next season will be better. So I think from a Buccaneers perspective, I don't know what their free agency situation is like or who they're set to lose, if anybody. But maybe the Buccaneers just continue on this trend and we see the next year the Buccaneers are exactly the same. And I think for the Chiefs, they need to... The Buccaneers game on Sunday was built on defense and let Tom Brady and the war machine do what they had to do. And I think the Chiefs, their war machine was completely hampered by defensive frailties and having absolutely... You said it best yesterday, Murph. You said they've just got... And the word's gone. You said they've got no... Help me out here. I'm dying on a river on my own. I don't even remember what I'm the word now.
I don't know what you mean. They got no what? They got no...
Discipline. You said they've got no discipline. Oh, yeah, no, and discipline. I think they need to have a long, hard look at perhaps that side of the ball in what they need to do personnel-wise to perhaps get something a bit more solid in the defense as a leader. I mean, I don't know. I think what we've seen from the Chiefs offensive-wise and what Andy Reid's capable of doing to a playbook, I think they're okay on offense. I think the defense needs a little look at to be able to keep them in games if the offense doesn't work.
I think the Chiefs' linebacker core is suspect. I think that for me is the difference in the two teams. Massively. You've got on one side, you've got Devin White and Lavonte David, who played their socks off. And on the other side, you've got undersized, fairly league average linebacker play. And so what that meant was when the Buccaneers could just do what they needed to do on offense because there was always someone available or open because the linebackers weren't quick enough. They weren't big enough to make the plays. Playoff Lenny ran over them. I mean, he ran over them 3-4 times. Knocked them over like they were dominoes. Like... When was the last time you saw Devin White or Lavonte David get absolutely decimated? It just doesn't happen. I think they need to go and get some linebackers. I think they need to get better O-line depth, clearly. I think they're the key areas for the Chiefs to do anything.
So given the fact that they're now picking at 31 and linebacker is, let's say, their biggest need for fresh young talent, Do we think they move back into the, they move up in the first round to get somebody if that's what they need?
I don't think they move up. If anything, they move back and get extra pieces.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, listen, you're not really picking that many linebackers in the first round. There aren't that many linebackers that go in the first round. They're elite talent. I mean, listen, Bush and White went 2 years ago. Patrick Queen went last year. There's not that many linebackers that go. You can get perfectly good and not just adequate, but better than above average players at linebacker at 31, or you can go in round two and you can pick guys. It's not really a position that people overly draft high and need to, unless they're a big player like Devin White at five, but you know, Devin White went at five. Like, Chiefs aren't going from 31 to five. No. And I don't think that there is a linebacker in this class that is at that elite level that a Devin White, a Devin Bush is. I'm haven't yet to go through them all and do a thorough analysis, so don't hold me to that take. But for my initial thought process, I'm not seeing an elite linebacker play.
I think Micah Parsons might have something to say about that moniker, but
and I need to go and watch some more Micah Parsons tape, but at the end of the day, I'm not convinced Micah Parsons is a top 10 player in this draft class. So then I sit there and think, if he's not, well, we'll wait and see. I think at the end of the day, it's interesting, and you asked the question about the Buccaneers and free agency. You know, they got a few guys. Chris Godwin, Shaq Barrett, who's on the tag this year, Lavonte David. They could move on from Donovan Smith if they wanted to. They've got playoff Lenny. They've got Antonio Brown. They've got Gronk. There's quite a few guys. Mike Evans has already said that he'll take a pay cut to pay these guys. I think Chris Godwin gets done. I think Shaq Barrett gets done. I think Lavonte David gets done. I think those guys, absolutely no doubt in my mind that those three guys remain, because Lavonte David has been a Buck his whole career, and you're not going to bail just because you've just won a ring. You know, he's been paid a lot of money in his career, and rightfully so. I think he'll take a below market deal to stay. I think Chris Godwin will either play on the tag or they'll do a deal. And I think Shaq Barrett will get a deal that he's very happy with. He couldn't quite get done last year. I hear that COVID was a big part of that. We'll see what happens this year. Then the questions come on AB, playoff Lenny, Gronk. If Gronk wants to play, he's back. They'll pay him whatever he wants to get paid to be back. He's not going to ask for silly money. He's not going to want a long-term deal. It's just whether he wants to come back.
Hmm.
You know, he's come back. He's won a ring. I mean, his life's pretty good. He can do what he wants. AB, that's an interesting one. I really don't know. There's a part of me that thinks that he could come back. And then there's a part of me that thinks that his ego could easily stand in the way of him coming back, because he could want a stupid deal because he's won a ring.
Yeah.
Playoff Lenny, I think it depends on how much money. I think if he's smart, if he's smart, he says, I'll take a $1 million, $2 million deal. Then we go and win another ring.
Oh, noodles.
Because I think if he wants big money, no one's going to pay him it. Well, if someone does, then fair play. But you have to look at it now that Tampa's now a highly, believe it or not, is a highly attractive place to play football now. It's hot. It's a good team. You're playing with Tom Brady. I mean, whoever leaves of AB, and it's going to be, I said, those three, and they can move on from Donovan Smith if they need to and draft a tackle to, because he's being paid a lot of money next year. They could keep him. That could go either way. He's going to get paid like $14, $15 million next year. And is he worth that? Probably not. So whoever they don't sign out of those guys, whether it's it's AB or playoff Lenny or whoever it is, the free agency market will be there for them to get who they need to get to replace those guys. I don't think the Buccaneers are going to be losing too many off this roster that are essential. There'll always be some people that will go and there'll always be some people leave, but there won't be many. Like I said, the key ones here are Lavonte David, who I think takes a below market deal to stay because you've stuck it out this long and finally got a ring. Why would you leave now?
Yeah.
And it's not like he's never been paid. He's had good money in his career. He doesn't need a life-changing amount of money now because he's had that already. Mike Evans has offered to take a pay cut. That will probably go to Shaq Barrett and Chris Godwin. They'll work it all out. Like my gut prediction says right now, Godwin plays on the tack. That's where I think the tag goes next year. I think it goes on Godwin.
Okay, so if most of the Buccaneers stay together, knowing what you know now, are we seeing them there next year in 56?
This team was built to win it in 56. It wasn't built to win it in 55.
Well, that sounds like you're saying yes then.
A lot of it also depends on what the other teams do. I mean, listen, the one thing that the Buccaneers have in their favour more than anything else next year is their path to win the division is a lot easier. No Drew Brees with the cap hell that's going on in New Orleans. Atlanta are going through a complete rebuild. Carolina going through a complete rebuild. It's no such thing as a given division title, but I would be shocked if anyone other than Tampa Bay Buccaneers won the NFC South next year. So, and then that makes your route to the playoffs obviously a bit easier because you're going to end up as, you know, a first seed, second seed, or third seed based on winning your division because the winner of the NFC East will be fourth. So, you know, you're going to be a top three seed and then you're a different path to the playoffs. You'd obviously then at that stage, it depends on what other teams do, but will the Buccaneers be in the playoffs next year? I mean, barring some kind of disaster, I would be at this point saying I'd be fairly confident they'd be in the playoffs next year. There could be injuries and all those sorts of things, but if everything remains as it is, yeah. And then from there, you see what happens. Don't rule them out.
No, I can't now. I can't rule out Tampa Bay, Tom, and the Buccaneers. It's not fair. We're not going to talk halftime performance. I've got quite a lot to say on that. So we'll save that for next week or whenever we're back in your ear holes, Rush Nation. Don't forget, we do have a competition over on Twitter. It's our pinned tweet. It's our signed Ricky Williams Saints jersey. There's a Just Giving page in there. If you do decide to enter, please do not select gift aid as that could void the whole competition and then our charity Unique wouldn't see any of the money, and we don't want that at all because we want all the charity money to go to Unique. Have I missed anything, Murph?
No, listen, so you know, like you said there, we're running this until the end of Feb, so and it's a donation to Unique. It's on the GoFundMe, so that is on the pinned tweet. I haven't actually done one with the jersey, but we do have the jersey. We do have pictures if you want to see the jersey. Do you want to go get it?
No.
No. Okay. We do have the jersey. It's in Stocks' house. So we have the jersey. So we did say that if it's an international winner, that's absolutely fine. We will ask for some form of contribution towards the postage. It's not outrageous, especially for a signed jersey, but yeah, we might ask for a small contribution just to help us with some of those costs, but not all of it. You know, we will definitely pay a fair amount of the cost, but with Brexit and everything, sending parcels to the US is significantly more expensive than it was 12 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that is it. So please just, it's a pretty simple competition, no keyword or anything like that. Just when you donate on the Just Giving page, just use your Twitter handle. Yeah, as Stock said, don't use the gift aid. So yeah, just enter that. I'm going to change the pinned tweet. I'll do that at some point this week. But yeah, and we got other giveaways planned. The playoff league's ended. I'll be in touch with people about stickers and stuff. So we'll do that this
week.
Can't
get them either.
That's all right. Stickers. We've got some people to give stickers to. I know Greg from Warrior Bowl won a division from us, very, very close, went down to the wire. And I know John Taylor won. He beat Jack because Patrick Mahomes let Jack down in the draft league. And there's two more, and I think Tin Man won one, but I need to check, and I can't remember who the other one was. But I will get into that over the next sort of 24, 48 hours. So we'll reach out, we'll get stuff, and we'll sort it all out. But yeah, more importantly, just keep staying engaged in the channel. If you haven't checked out the YouTube video of the preview, yes, I appreciate the game is over, but there was loads of great insight in it. Do check that out.
And there's almost 5 hours of us in there, so you know, yeah, you come for the good stuff, and there's almost a day's work in there if you're skiving, so stick that on.
Do you know what, if nothing else, the single most request guest we get every time is Joe Pisapia. He's on it, and that was a great chat.
Yeah, and our boy Lee did an absolutely smashing job with the intro and the introductory slides and making it look fantastic, as he really always does. And there incredible. He is. You've heard him today when my gremlins took over. He's behind the glass making this thing run on steam, coal, or biofuels, whatever it is that he uses to get this thing out. So we massively appreciate you, mate. Murph, congratulations on being part of the World Championship train, my friend. Enjoy the ride that you are currently on.
I was going to say, at least people know that I've not, like, if you've been listening to us since the beginning or since I joined, you know, I've been on the Buccaneers train for a while. I mean, I've been on the train for 20 plus years, but in case people go, oh no, you swore because you've done Bravo. No, I mean, you can listen to the games.
It's on record. 18 months ago, there was no Tom Brady in Tampa and Murph was still there in his Buccaneers stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. What can I say? So it's great. And I have a Super Bowl programs from both games now, even though I didn't go to this one. But yeah, loads of cool stuff we're going to do in the off season. We're going to do into a lot of it. We're going to do a review of the season because I really enjoyed that part of the show. I know you did too when we did it last week, Starks and Lee, and go through some of the stuff we missed because I guarantee it's loads. But
every time we talk about it, there's more.
But just to everyone who's listened to us and over the past week who's engaged, thank you so much. Love this show.
Keep doing what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. Rush Nation, I'm going to leave it here by saying if you do want to chat with any one of the 5-Yard crew, reach out. We got your back. Just come for a cup of tea if that's what you want, obviously via Zoom or hologram, depending on how I'm feeling on the day. But Rush Nation, until next time, enjoy the Super Bowl replays. We're out of here. Keep rushing.